Deadly as ICCPR. The United Nations Human Rights Committee's questions rightly reflect the growing international understanding that the U.S. government's rhetoric on human rights does not match its actions at home or abroad. Here we are loudly remonstrating at Russia's actions in the Ukraine, which are so similar to many of the actions that the U.S. has taken, backed, of course, by the largest military the world has ever seen. And yet here we go, not blundering in militarily, but certainly sanctions do accomplish often the same end military actions do. And a key problem with the ongoing narrative and drumbeat is this. ExxonMobil, the U.S. top producer of fracked gas, has also numerous joint ventures, get this, wait for it, with Russian state oil and gas company, the Russian state oil and gas company, Rosneft, as do BP, Chevron and ConocoPhillips. Put that another way, the narrative thus far has been a disingenuous one driven by a bought-off politicians and bureaucrats, right? But in actual fact, and what we are beginning to see the glimmers of, is that this is, like everything else, is just a play to get for the U.S. to get their hands on oil, gas, and control the sources of energy, the flow of energy in that part of the world. And one of Oregon's lowest performing schools might move to a year-round calendar to combat what's known as the summer slide. If the switch is made, the students at Rosa Parks Elementary in North Portland would have to take some classes in June, July, and August. What a great idea! It takes months for kids to get back up to speed when school resumes in September, and they more or less knock off in April or May. So the fact is that there is so little time actually spent learning anything that it's remarkable that we have the dismal results we do have. This is no longer necessary for children to be out of school all summer. Because why? Because they don't do any work on the farm. I have a farm. I don't see any children out there working in June or July or August. No, they're all playing video games. And in any case, so we'll see what happens with that experiment in learning. And, of course, this is the 22-pound cat that went round the world, was heard round the world. Who would have thought that this small story that popped up in the AP weeks ago would have had the impact that it has? You might as well be... we might as well have seen Russia taking over this cat. In any case, it was trapped and taken to the Multnomah County Animal Services. It's currently residing in a shelter where I expect people are lining up, even as we speak, to adopt the thing. The Ashland City Council holds a public hearing tonight on a proposal to ban people from openly carrying loaded guns in public. When it was first proposed, the measure drew threats of a lawsuit and of a boycott of the Southern Oregon tours of Ashland itself. But the council has backed away from provisions that would regulate gun storage at this. We don't want to. On the one hand, we don't want to scare the tourists away. On the other hand, we don't want to tick off the NRA. But perhaps we could advertise Ashland as Shakespeare packing or something. And the new study finds Americans of all ages are charting their own paths across a media landscape that no longer relies on front pages and evening newscasts anymore. We've seen it again and again. This is, we no longer seek out what's worth knowing from these sources that we were familiar with. But we still have to pay heed to serious news, even as people seek out the lighter stuff, according to Media Insight Project. The conclusion to the project bursts the myth of the media bubble, the notion that no one pays attention to anything beyond a limited sphere of interest, like, celebrities or college hoops or Facebook posts. Where people are actually looking to find the news has shifted radically because, not so much because of where they're looking, but the nature of news itself. And the fact that much of what is presented as objective, factual information that is devoid of personal subjective bias. Simply, that is a myth. That is not true. It doesn't matter what source one goes to. All of it is subject to bias, whether conscious or subconscious. What the key thing to look for is whether or not the news source, media source, will tell you up front what its bias is. Just go ahead, say it. Don't try to hide behind just the facts, please, because it's always obvious in the end. And finally, this Palestinian president Mahmoud Abbas has only bad options, it seems, at least from his perspective, as he heads into there was the White House meeting that came up yesterday with President Barack Obama. Though Obama is pretty distracted at this point. Abbas could accept a U.S. proposed framework for an Israeli-Palestinian partition deal. He rejected, or he could agree to extend negotiations. Though we'll have to look and see what's ahead. And hopefully we'll be having Nasser Khamsia on tomorrow to give us a view from the ground of what politics look like in Palestine right now. We have just enough time for weather. Occasional sprinkles today, mostly cloudy, however. We've got in high near 56 and calm winds tonight, overcast skies, lows around 41. And for tomorrow, rain bucketing down, starting up early, late in the morning and pretty much dousing the rest of the day. Highs near 53. And for tomorrow night, 20% chance of showers, cloudy, and a low around 37. Today, we do have an alternative outlook for you. The moon is 17 days old. It's a root moon. It's a waning gibbous root moon in Virgo. And it's a good time now, according to the synodic people, to sow root vegetables. Also berries, bulbs, onions, biennials, and perennials. Biodynamic outlook, moon in Virgo, it's an earth sign. So again, the advice from the biodynamicists is go for the root plants. Not so good for flowering things. The sidereal outlook, moon in Virgo, dry and barren, good time for garden maintenance. Don't forget, too, that all of these different systems that rely on the moon are not merely systems for growing food. They are ways of looking at the natural world that incorporate the weather, nature of the soil, how it affects us, and how all of it is tied together. It's important to have one's feet on the ground where one lives, and it is critical to be in touch with some of the movements of elements through and around our world, as we recently learned more news on the Big Bang. Well, thanks very much for that. We had Dave Rovics on yesterday. He has two pieces out, the Trans-Pacific Partnership 101 and also The American Way, where a song in which he offers John Kerry some advice. And it's about time, isn't it? And it would certainly be advisable if Kerry actually took the advice in song. Just one more note before we go out. Up there in Washington State, is the State Department of Fish and Wildlife is seeking the public's help in finding whoever is responsible for the illegal killing of a gray wolf in Stevens County last month. Department says a two-year-old, you know, black female wolf from the, it's called the Smackout Pack, was found dead February 9th near Cedar Lake in northeast Stevens County. Really sad, and probably happening more often than we know about. So look out, Ashland, because here comes the NRA. And on that note, this has been Cascadia for Tuesday, February 18th, 2014. Janet Anderson engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Janet. Kathleen Stephen is, of course, the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts, no rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
On Flashpoints, the corporate press becomes the U.S. State Department's flak in the Ukraine. Also, indigenous communities from all over California gather in Sacramento to protest the governor's plan for expanded fracking. We'll have a report on the new rolling fast by mothers standing against the deportation of thousands of undocumented workers and their families. And we'll have a discussion on the way youth and brown kids are treated by the cops. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. Well, the situation in the Ukraine is unfolding. Crimea has voted overwhelmingly, according to all reports, to leave the Ukraine and join Russia. The reporting is all over the place. There's not a lot of excellent reporting coming out of the corporate media. We are delighted to have back on the air with us Robert Perry, who, along with Consortium News folks, have been doing a really fine job on reporting the complexities of the situation. Bob, let me start by getting your response to the vote and what's going on now, and then we'll talk about the way the press is covering it.
Well, it wasn't a surprise that the voters of Crimea wanted to leave Ukraine and join Russia. I mean, perhaps that's not the best choice on earth, but if you were living in Crimea and you were sitting in a situation where you had a failed state, Ukraine, on the brink of a civil war, this very right-wing government that has seized power in Kiev, and you're basically, and you have ties to Russia, you speak Russian. Historically, Crimea has been part of Russia, going back to the 1700s and Catherine the Great, and only ended up in Ukraine as sort of an administrative matter back in the 1950s. There was no real tie there particularly. So the vote wasn't surprising at all. The fact that it was overwhelming was a logical choice, actually, if you were in the position of people in Crimea.
Now, when you hear a headline like you sort of point out, Ukraine decries Russian invasion, I guess that was the headline in the Washington Post on Sunday. What's wrong with that headline?
Well, first of all, it's rather alarmist beyond belief, but it's because what you're talking about is a question of seizing a gas terminal just on the border of Crimea. But beyond that, the whole issue of what is Ukraine? Ukraine is a country which is divided essentially into a western part that is more ethnically Ukrainian, if you will, with more of a western outlook. You have eastern and southern Ukraine, which is the majority of the country in terms of people, more Russian-oriented, Russian ethnic, often Russian-speaking, and of course Crimea, which is a sort of a peninsula on the far south. The reason that President Yanukovych won was because he came from those areas, and they outnumbered the folks in the West. But Kiev is in the West, so what you had was an elected president, certainly not a very good one, in Yanukovych. But he was overthrown by what began as a popular movement in the West, but was then spearheaded violently by some of these far-right neo-Nazi groups. So then you had you had this rump, you know, this coup government, which then oversaw this rump parliament changing of who was going to be in charge, not constitutionally. This was all in violation of the Ukrainian constitution. So you have essentially a minority part of the country seizing power illegitimately, although the United States and Europe has now decided that it was legitimate. And that should not be what you call Ukraine. It is a coup government. It is a regime, perhaps. It's the regime in Kiev. But for the Washington Post to pretend that from that process you have Ukraine saying anything is misleading. It's a very much more of a mixed picture. But as the point I guess you've been making about the press coverage, it has been the U.S. Mainstream press coverage has been some of the worst I've ever seen in my 30-plus years in Washington.
And you've been pointing this out now for several months. I mean, particularly most recently in terms of the sarin gas attacks in Syria. The corporate press does seem to be at an all-time low now. When it comes to the State Department foreign policy, it's hard to find a journalist that can separate themselves from sort of the stenographer work of being a State Department sort of, really, you have to say, flack.
Well, you know, obviously this has been a problem that's been ongoing with the Washington Press Corps for a very long time. Certainly if you go back to the 1970s when there was some more independence, more aggressive challenging of what the government was telling the Press Corps, the days of Watergate and Cy Hirsch and the later Vietnam War coverage. And that has been sort of eroding over the decades that we've seen. I was here in the 1980s a great deal and doing Iran-Contra as you were, and we saw a lot of the press coverage then weakening, not being willing to challenge or deal with these complicated issues. Of course, in 2002, 2003, you had the Washington Press Corps jumping on board Bush's crazy bandwagon on Iraq's WMD and contributing to one of the great crimes of this century, at least so far, the invasion of Iraq with hundreds of thousands of dead. Based on basically a